Welcome to the Easy Sports Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Ed Smith, and we're broadcasting live from the Arizona State Fair. And thank goodness this is the last broadcast, I should say, from the Arizona State Fair. I've been doing a lot of, shows from here. I've been broadcasting. I've been helping Dave Isaac out on his show each week. I think I need just a little bit. I've been working with Dave Isaac for the last 4 weeks on his show, doing those Friday afternoons from 2 to 4. And we've also been doing Easy Sports Talk Radio Show every Saturday night. And I'm not ashamed to say I'm glad the fair is almost over. It's been a lot of fun. Great experience, though. Great experience. It's just that I'm looking forward to my cozy studio. I love my studio. I've figured that out as we've gone by these last 4 weeks. Like I said, it's been a lot of fun. I have a very special guest on my show tonight. I've been excited to have her on. And she is joining me live down here at the studio at the fair. Her name is Amber May. Amber, say hello to everybody.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here at the fair with you, Ed.
I'm glad you're here. And I want Amber, you know a lot about what we do here, obviously, because you are part of the family. Actually, you are, I would probably say, the biggest cog in the whole family down there at KXXT. And I want you to tell everybody, because I was a little bit ago, I was asking you what your title is. And you said, just make one up, because I do just about everything. And I do know that.
Yes.
So just, yeah, tell everybody a little bit about you and how you came to KXXT and what your passion is regarding sports.
I came to KXXT probably about almost 5 years ago, and I got a degree in broadcasting, and so I did, and sociology, so it's a two-part degree, and I just put my resume everywhere, and I prayed to God. I'm like, God, put me into the station you want me to be in, and nobody else called me back for interviews except this station. Well, I had interviews, but and I really thought they were excellent interviews, but I told God, I don't want to be there. Please close the door if you don't want me there.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, he did. He closed every door, and this door opened up, and I wanted confirmation from him. So as I'm pulling into my driveway, and I'm listening to FM radio, my dial changed by itself to 1280 AM.
Wow.
It's crazy. It's okay. The only real, true, supernatural thing that ever really happened to me.
Okay.
So it's kind of crazy, but it's been fun. You know, I got to meet so many cool people coming through the radio station, and you know, I feel pretty cool knowing an NFL player. I mean, that makes me feel cool. I'm like, I know Ed Smith.
You know a lot of people, though, because even one of a common person that we have in, you know, a person we have in common is J.D. Hill.
J.D. Hill.
He has a show on the station.
Yep.
And it's funny because I was out golfing with him a few weeks ago, and we just, you know, in conversation, and we got to know a little bit more about each other. And then the following week, I think I was in the station, and you and I sat down, and his name came up. So it's all like that 6 degrees of separation.
Oh, so. My gosh. So true. And also, the one thing I love about J.D. Hill is he's a Sun Devil, and I'm a Sun Devil. And we have that in common, and we talk Sun Devil football all the time. But also about degrees of separation, I deal with a lot of pastors, and it's so funny because I'll be talking about, oh, I did this interview with such and such pastor, and they're like, oh, that's my bride. I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then I met, you know, the mayor of Phoenix. I'm going to know the next mayor of Phoenix because he came through the station. I've met Sheriff Joe, Sheriff Paul. I've met all kinds of people.
How'd you meet Sheriff Joe?
Sheriff Joe has come into the station to do a lot of interviews.
Oh, okay.
And he was on my show last year, and he's been on other radio shows. And then Sheriff Paul came down and did a radio interview with somebody, and I got to meet him. And I got to meet a lot of the state legislatures, actually.
And speaking of shows, and it's funny because we always learn things about each other sitting and talking. And I didn't realize you had your own show. Tell everybody about your own show.
Cause oh,
I want
thank
you. To,
you.
Yeah, tell everybody about your show, what time it's on, and, you know.
My show comes on every Thursday and Friday at 5:45 p.m. on 1010 a.m. So make sure you tune in to 1010 a.m.
I am going to.
On Thursday and Friday. And also, don't forget, Easy Sports Talk. You have to listen every Saturday between 6 and 7, same station.
There you go. And speaking of new shows, to my right, she's not on us with us tonight, but my producer, she is actually getting ready to embark on her own journey here soon.
I am so excited about her show. It's going to be this Wednesday at 4 o'clock.
And it's called Zarai Speaks, and she's going to be debuting her show Wednesdays from 4 to 4:30, I think it is.
4 to 4:30,
to 4:30. And we're going to pump that up, I think, and I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but I think she's asked me to be on her show, the first one with her.
That would be so great.
I gracefully accepted. I was so honored that she would ask me to be on the show because I know she's going to blow up and be a big, huge star because she's been working so hard. And I don't get enough opportunities to thank her for everything that she does for me. And I just want to let her know that I'm going to support her as much as she's supported me and then some. So, again, Zariah Speaks will be debuting Wednesday, November 9th at 4 p.m.
That's this week.
This week. And I want everybody to tune in because she's got a great concept.
Oh,
and,
my gosh. And, she blew me away with her concept.
Yeah, it's going to be a great show. It's going to be a great show. Now, let's tell everybody why Amber is sitting with us here tonight.
Oh, let me give a shout-out to my husband.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah. Where's he at?
This is a big shout-out to my husband, Philip. I love you. He's somewhere at the fair.
Okay.
You know, we wanted to walk around and stuff, but I wanted to send a shout-out to him anyways, and I'm really proud of him because he's going to be on Barking and probably getting back into football and stuff like that.
You know
that,
what we should have done? And I'm glad you – if he comes back around here, we've got to ask him to go on a journey for me.
Okay.
I'm in search of the
gummy bears.
I know Makia is sitting next to me telling me you shouldn't be even messing with all that sugar, but I've been in – it's like the Bigfoot or whatever.
Uh-huh.
This big gummy bear is somewhere out here at this fair, and I've been here 4 weeks now, and I haven't seen hide or hair of it. So I'm thinking if we can get him out there somewhere, or if anybody is out here at the fair and you happen to know where the big gummy bear is, please come – just come tell me. Yeah, I'll go get it myself.
Let us know if you can find the big gummy bear, because we want to know.
Ed wants to know where the big gummy bear is. But the reason I think it was 2 weeks ago, you and I were sitting and talking. It was after one of our shows, second show here.
At the fair.
At the fair, right here. And we were sitting around, and we started talking a little bit about, and was it last week or 2 weeks ago?
Probably 2 weeks ago.
And every time I come in and sit down with you at the office, and then even last week or 2 weeks ago after the show, you have some of the most amazing questions, because it was almost you had this list of questions in your head and you started rapid firing at me, and I thought, wow, why waste that and not make we could it's
we
like we couldn't waste
like 5 million shows by
I know.
Now.
And I'm thinking there's no way we got to put this on air. So tonight's show, what we're going to do, and last week we kind of did it a little bit. Last week I kind of emptied out the mailbox. You know, fans have sent us some different questions. I had my brother Irv on with me, and we kind of answered a lot of questions that, you know, some of the simple things. And this one, like I said, this is a really special show for me because I'm ready to turn Amber loose with her questions. I want everybody, you know, because there are so many people that have the questions that you have, and they want them answered, and they don't have that outlet. And that's basically what you said to me. You thought, wow, I got to take advantage of this. I got this athlete in front of me. So here we are tonight, and I want you to start firing away. I know I have a favorite question already that I know you're going to ask me eventually, and we'll get to that one.
Yes.
But I want you to start off, and like I said, this is going to be a little Q&A here on Easy Sports Talk.
Now, this is information if you've ever wanted to ask a professional athlete. These are the things that go through my mind, and I'm trying to come from a regular person because I'm a regular person, and I've had these questions for years. And I always think of these things like if I met a superstar, if I met a movie actor, whatever. But I guess we can start out with, here's one question I had based on reality TV and watching football players and stuff. Now, they travel around a lot, and I know you've been on 4 different teams, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't forget my minor league baseball days, too.
No, I'm not going to forget that because that's one of my questions.
Okay.
But since you're a professional athlete and you go from team to team to team, do professional athletes rent homes or buy homes?
Well, it happens, and here's the situation. I'll give you the perspective starting out in my career.
Okay.
From my baseball days, because I was a minor league baseball player. I was making millions of dollars. I had my little signing bonus and everything. But, you know, starting out, we were not making a lot of money in my minor league baseball days. And for the most part, home base for me was always New Jersey, because that's where I was born and raised. And at the end of every season, you know, because the season can start. I remember starting a season in spring training in Florida. Then I got promoted. You know, like we'd go and start the regular season. I was in South Bend, Indiana. Then I got promoted to the Double-A team in Birmingham. And then after the season, I had a little bit of break, and I'd go back to Jersey and then have to go back down to Florida for what they called instructional ball or winter ball. And then by the time late October, November came, now I was officially done, and it was time to figure out what I was going to do with my off season. So a lot of times I'd go back to Jersey for a quick minute or two, but then I would go usually back to Florida and spend my off season. And I rented. I rented, you know, apartments or whatever, just to get through the off season and get to spring training. Once I started playing professional football, it was an entirely different story. You know, I had this a lot more money, and I kind of created a home base, but I still really wasn't sure where I wanted to live. I relocated to Atlanta after playing with the Falcons in 97. And just to backtrack a little bit, to give you an idea, from 87 to 1987 when I got drafted out of high school to 1997 after I played my first year with the Falcons, I re-signed my second year contract with the Falcons, so I knew I was going to be there in 98. That was the first time I'd ever renewed a lease.
Wow.
So for all those years, I travel, and I used to travel. I had a little white Camaro, and my white Camaro and my and I could be up and gone.
You in a Camaro?
Right
out
of,
yeah. You should see this man. He's tall and he's big.
I had my little white Camaro, and I could be mobile in a matter. I remember one year I got traded from the White Sox to the Brewers in the middle of the season. It was after the first game of a doubleheader, and I, you know, my manager called me into the office after the first game. Team was getting ready to go back on the field for a second game. He said, well, you just got traded to the Milwaukee Brewers. And my options were I could fly out that day, the next day, up to Wisconsin, or they would give me an extra day if I wanted to drive. And I thought, well, if I'm leaving this organization, I'm leaving everything. I'm going, packing my car up. I packed it up that night, and I was on the road the next morning by 6 o'clock in the morning, heading to Wisconsin. So as a minor league baseball player, I always had to be able to be, like I said, mobile in a minute, as I used to call it. Once I started playing, like I said, football, I did, until I really realized where I wanted to be, I rented. I used to have apartments everywhere I went. And what I would do, though, is when I was with the, after my 2 years with the Falcons, even after I left there and I went up to Detroit and Philly to play, I actually left my apartment down in Atlanta because I wanted a home base. So even though I went up to Detroit, went to Philly eventually and battled back and forth, I always kept my apartment there. But eventually I did buy the first house. But most athletes, it all depends on where their comfort level is in the city they're playing, because everybody doesn't want to live in Seattle, Washington.
Yeah.
Or they don't want to live in, you know, and a lot of guys, they keep their homes in wherever they want to grow up or where they went to college. And so it all depends. Everybody's different, but it all depends on their circumstances. But, you know, when you start making millions and millions of dollars like some of those guys are, they definitely have a home base as far as having a house. But what they'll do a lot of times is they'll rent in the city that they're in as well.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I always wondered, because I think that'd be a pain in the butt to have to always put your house up for sale all the time.
Yeah. Most guys, especially once you start having a family, you don't want your family commute. You know, if you're playing in a city that you don't necessarily want to live in, but you don't want to put your family through that, because the life of a professional athlete is very transient from time to time. You literally have to, you know, you get traded or released, and you never promise the next day in the professional sports.
So does the families stay? Like, let's say they wanted to stay in Atlanta, and then the husband just got drafted to San Fran. So do they go with him, or do they typically stay? Because the kids have to go to school and stuff.
Every family is different. It all depends on, you know, if they have their roots settled there in Atlanta, what they'll do is daddy will go away and play the season. And periodically through the year, the family comes out and stays a weekend or two. You know, they might, in some instances, they might do it the other way, where if he's comfortable enough going and buying, if he feels comfortable enough that he's going to be in San Fran for 5 years, say if it's a big-time star and he knows he's going to buy the house, he's going to be there, his money's going to be there, what they'll do a lot of times is they'll relocate. So every situation is kind of based on the circumstances of the family.
Now, we talked a minute ago about coming into money, and we all know that professional athletes get paid pretty well. Is it like the lottery system when, like, someone finally wins the big lottery within 3 to 4 years, they go broke? Is it like that at all with young men just straight out of college and stuff, not really understanding maybe the value of a dollar, and then all of a sudden they're millionaires? Is it like that? Or
what you see a lot of times, because you can't really – athletes aren't trained in when they're young. You know, you have to look at the background of a lot of athletes as well. They come from, you know, broken families. You know, the only reason they're in the position that they are eventually is because they do have a God-blessed ability to play sports. But the training that they get, or the I guess the mentality of not thinking of money as something that's always going to be there. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard. That's why you see these guys that go out and first thing they want to do is they want to buy two or three cars.
Right.
They've got, you know, the biggest house in the neighborhood.
Right.
And another problem is what happens is young men, they went to school with who, you know, they were used to hang out in the hood and have fun, and all of a sudden now he's making millions of dollars. And those guys are still, they're, you know, considered a buddy. And sometimes they're the biggest problem and the biggest reason guys don't know how to manage their money, because they still, you know, they want to take care of their family and their friends. And a lot of times you turn around and next thing you know, they're broke. They are broke. There's a lot of money that's kind of going out the window. You would hope that every young man coming into that kind of money, the first thing he would have is someone to guide him in his life, whether it be a father or a mentor or someone like that. In a lot of instances, it's not the case, but you would hope that somewhere along their life they've met somebody who really has their best interest at hand, and that includes their agents. A lot of people think that, you know, an agent is there to take care of you, and I was blessed to have a great agent both in my baseball and football career, but I know a lot of guys that had agents, and let's be honest, agents are there for one reason only. The first reason is
they
want to get paid, and they want that 3% of that $1 million, $2 million contract. And once you're used up and done, they've got other ponies in the stable. So, you know, I was fortunate enough. When I was playing ball, I had an agent who really cared about what I was trying to accomplish. And especially, he knew my background coming from playing minor league baseball. And he actually steered me towards someone who was going to help me manage my money. And that was a very beneficial.
That's good, because I would hope that there would be a guy like that, or the team that would set up their guys with a financial advisor. Because, man, if I was a young man and I went from just being a regular person, just paycheck to paycheck, then all of a sudden my God-given talent gave me a really awesome paycheck.
Yeah.
I think personally I probably would do the whole initially want to blow it, but then I would hope that I would be smart enough to like find someone to help me manage my money so that I don't have to work at McDonald's after I've killed my back or my knee or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because it only takes one injury before you're out.
And that's the problem. The problem is all the young athletes, they think they're invincible.
To
the older guys that who've gone through it, and most of those, they were just had the same mind frame years prior, but you know, they begin to wise up a little bit. But the younger guys, they always think, you know, I'm going to make this money forever. And what happens is they, you know, get to a point in their career where they're either, you know,
older, or
they get hurt, and there's no backup plan. And that really is it's a rough spot to be in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because then now you have to transition into, you know, life after sports.
Which made me ask this question when I was preparing and when I think about this. What is it like mentally? I mean, what's it like? Because all your life you've put time and energy into your sport. So most kids start out in elementary school and then they just get really good at it, high school. Then they take the best out of high schoolers, put them into college. And so then you're in college and then the NFL drafts you because you're the best in your college level. Okay, so you put your whole life into being a football player, a baseball player. You put your whole identity into that. What happens when it's gone?
Well, you said the magic word, the identity. You know, as an athlete, that is how basically everybody thinks that's all you do. That's what you've done from the time you're a little boy. You get into high school, you get all the accolades, you move into college. And you know, I skipped the college phase, but you know, I was a professional athlete right out of high school. And fortunately for me, I was grounded by my family, my parents. They had, you know, they kept us humble and recognizing that, you know, our talent was a blessing. It wasn't something that, you know, to take for granted, but it was also, they were more, you know, they stressed more about us being good quality people, not athletes. And that prepared me years and years later, because between the two sports, I got 15 years in. By the time I was retiring at the old age of 32, you know, I was all of a sudden now a former athlete. And it's a tough blow to the ego. And a lot of guys, it's a tough transition phase. A lot of guys fail this phase because they have been in the limelight their entire life.
Right.
And all of a sudden they're out of it. And now you have to you know, I'm not going to say become a normal person because I don't want to make it seem like athletes are on another planet
right,
or
right.
something
no,
like that.
No, but I get what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, you're just a regular person at that point.
You know, and when I'll tell you what happened to me when I finally realized that because if I would have had it my way, they would have been taking my uniform off my dead, lifeless body because I would have wanted to do it forever.
That's but, my husband, too.
Yeah, you get to a certain point where the career is coming to an end and the reality sits in. And, you know, I was fortunate. I had a little bit of time to kind of, okay, sit and reflect and then think, okay, what's next? And when you ask that question of yourself, the answer doesn't come right away. And unless you have, you know, and I didn't have necessarily what I'd call a backup plan. I always knew that I was destined to do other things beyond sports, but initially I had to, you know, think it out. Okay, what do I want to do with myself? And I tell people all the time, I had to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. At the age of 32, 33, I had to really kind of refocus and say, okay. And it took a little bit of time, you know, initially, because what happens is when you are an athlete and you're done, everybody still wants a piece of you for a while. The further you get away from the game, meaning you get a couple years out and all of a sudden 5 years out, 10 years out, the longer you stay out of the limelight, the more you become mortal.
Right.
In everybody's eyes. You know, not just your own, but in everybody's eyes. But initially, I still had a lot of people after me because I was, you know, I was living in Atlanta. I was taking some time off, like I said, and I bump into people, and everybody's got this great opportunity that they want to get you involved in. A lot of times it includes, you know, you investing your money, and that's a no-no. That's a bad sign, you know. If somebody wants to do business with you, it shouldn't be just because you got a lot of money
right.
in the bank. But it is a very – it's a rough transition for a lot of guys, and you hope that – everybody
do you think a lot of them go into drugs after that?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think you go into them because of that. If you're dibbling and dabbling in drugs, that's something that most, I don't think a guy gets into his late 20s, 30s and all of a sudden figures out I'm going to start trying this stuff. I think what happens is the guys that end up having those huge problems are guys that were already messing around with those things, already dibbling in them, maybe on a lighter basis, but now all of a sudden you've got all this free time on your hand and you start to question your self-worth because now you're not the, you know, on prime time television every week, or, you know, you're losing a little bit of your recognition. And what does that old say? Idle hands are the devil's workshop.
Yep.
And what happens is guys all of a sudden have a lot of time on their hands, and then they have a lot of bad influence around them too. Their friends who've been buddies all those years, all of a sudden they start getting into things that they shouldn't be getting into. So it you know, I would say that the majority of guys, if they start going in a bad direction, it's because they've always been dibbling, you know, along the road. So
what's it like, you know, as a professional athlete to have the thought that there perhaps is a young child looking up to you who wants to be just like you, who has dreams and aspirations of being a professional athlete? What's that like for someone in that position?
I always thought it was an honor for me. And one of the things I do to this day, I like to go and speak at any function that someone likes to have me, as long as I can fit into my schedule. And, you know, I've tried to make a little bit of a career out of speaking, but I know every budget doesn't have money in it to
right.
bring someone in. So when I can, you know, if it's pro bono or whatever, I like to make sure that I go out and support the kids or youth or whatever the organization is. Especially the kids, because, you know, as we know, a few years ago, Charles Barkley came out with the old, you know, I'm not a role model. Well, and I love and respect Charles, and in my eyes and my vision, I've always been a role model for kids that would want to aspire to do some of the things I've done in my life. And the biggest reason that I hold that true is because I was one of those kids all those years ago looking up to, whether it be professional athletes or whoever, you know, we were, you know, it was always, that was always that kid that, you know, in the front yard shooting the hoops and at 3-2-1, pretending like you're Dr. J or whoever
right,
it
right.
is. And I will say this much, though, the key is I looked up to athletes and had them as role models, but my biggest role model was my father
and
my mother.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that was...
You know
that,
how lucky you are these days to find these kids these days are growing up without fathers.
Oh, yeah.
And that's so sad because fathers are so important to a child's development.
Oh, yeah. And we all know that every family can't be together in a family.
Right, right.
But if he has a father figure,
yeah.
even if it is a stepfather, whatever the circumstances are, all kids need that father figure, just as they need
You're
their
right.
mother as
You're
well.
Right.
And if I can do anything with, you know, and I really, I'll say this, I really appreciate the fact, like, someone like you, you'll like, look at me and you'll tell me that, like, because you've used the word a couple times, like, I'm a superstar or something. And I'm like, I'm the average
like,
Joe.
I'm
just, when I think about my career, and I know I accomplished some, what I would, a lot of people would consider
Super
great.
Hey, Super Bowl. You won the Super Bowl.
No, we lost. We actually, we lost in it. But we were there. We were there. But no, I appreciate, you know, when people look at me and think, you know, like, you're this superstar. You did. And for me, it's humbling. At the same time, I know that, and I think I've used this line a few times. One of my favorite movies is Spider-Man. And at one point, his Uncle Buck, I think, or whatever, Uncle Ben, said to Peter Parker, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Right.
And even though, like I said, I'm not a superstar or anything like that, but I do know that I do have a lot to offer, whether it be just any young man or woman out there, someone looking for a positive story, because, you know, there's too much negative out there.
There is a lot.
If I can do anything or be a positive role model for anybody, it's my duty to do it, not just, you know, I don't take it lightly. I really don't.
Now let's go back to the locker rooms. So you guys are all done with the game.
Here comes my favorite question.
The question. All the reporters are waiting outside. They can't wait to get in to ask you, how did you feel about this play, whatnot. You guys aren't even fully dressed yet, and there's female sports reporters. Now, male sports reporters are not allowed in the locker room with female athletes, yet there's female sports reporters allowed in locker rooms with professional athletes, and they're all getting dressed. They're coming out of the shower. What was that like for you and for maybe other athletes? Is it uncomfortable? Because frankly, I think they need to stay out of the locker room, my personal opinion.
When you asked me this question the other day, a couple weeks ago, I laughed because that was one of my, I get that question a lot. And for someone like myself, I'm a humble man. But and even think about it, at the time when I was playing sports, it was football especially, I was in the best physical condition I could have possibly been in.
Mm-hmm.
So I was real proud of my body. At the same time, I didn't want to share it with just any and everybody. And the rules in the NFL are such that when a game is over, everybody, you know, you see everybody out on the field, getting in a circle, praying, guys, you know, giving each other dap, and then we part ways and you get into the locker room. 15 minutes after the end of every NFL game, the locker rooms are to be open to any and all people, male or female, with credentials. So that means that any woman with credentials, whether she works for ESPN or local paper or whatever it is, she has every right, just like Joe Blow, coming in the locker room. Now, I had a certain technique because, like I said, I'm a humble man, and I didn't think it was right to, even though they were in there, to try to embarrass people or anything like that. So I usually have my count. And like you said, think about it. 15 minutes is not a long time.
No.
Especially everybody's getting in the locker room.
All that gear you have to take on.
All the gear we have to take on. And all the, you know, all the coaches have to give their talk, whether it's a good game, bad game. And then finally he breaks us down and, okay, now everybody will see you tomorrow. And now it's a scramble to try to get your uniform off. At least for me it was, because, like I said, I didn't want to be disrespecting anybody coming into the locker room. But imagine, there were some guys who almost, they were not, I'm trying to say, they figured, well, if they're going to be in here, I'm going to show them everything they want to see. And it never failed. I'd be in my locker room next to the guy, the star wide receiver who had a great game, and there's like 30 people surrounding him, everybody leaning in, trying to get their microphone as close to him as they can. He is standing in front of his locker in his birthday suit and letting it all hang out.
Oh, my gosh.
And when I say all, I mean,
oh my gosh,
everything.
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 So all the cameras in here over the shoulders, so they can probably easily see you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, you got humble me sitting next to him, and I'm trying to get out of my uniform, my pads and everything. Then I get down to my slide, my pants or my shorts or whatever underneath. You know, I'd wrap a towel around myself, then kind of finish undressing and then make my way into the shower. And on the way back, you know, or as you're walking, the funniest part was seeing some, you know, 6'4", 290-pound behemoth of a man standing there with some 5'5", petite woman with her microphone or her recorder in her hand, He is, like I said, he is naked to the world. And she's standing there with the microphone in his, right in his face.
Right.
And yeah, I would always, I would watch the eyes. I would always want to see.
Of course.
Because, you know, I mean.
It's just natural.
It's
the
natural.
Opposite sex, it's just natural to want
well,
to
here's
take a
peek. Here's the thing that I always thought that I, because you hit on it. I have friends that work in the, like one of my best friends, he's a radio guy with the WNBA, the San Antonio team. So whenever he comes in town, I go and I watch games, and he would always take me down to the locker to meet some of the girls after the games or just to say hi because, you know, I like to respect athletes for what they do, and it's always cool. So, you know, you go to their locker room, like the WNBA stars, a man couldn't walk in there if he had guard or, you know, a machine gun. They couldn't
right.
get past that front door.
Absolutely.
Yet on the other side, the I guess the hypocrisy of it, like you said, is that we don't have any, there's nothing guarding us. We
nope.
just have to kind of, we have to accept it. And like I said, a lot of guys that I play ball with used to make the women pay for it too. If you want to be in here, you want to act like a man, I'm going to treat you like a man. And I, like I said, I took it the other way. I could never disrespect a woman like that. Yeah, I don't care
I
what the situation
that about
was. It's just, you know, that was just, you know, a lot of times I would almost want to tell guys, hey man, look, you know, but you know, it's each his own, and
right.
like I said, if they're gonna be in that position, then they almost have to expect some of that to happen. But I'm sure a lot of them saw things they never in their life really, really wanted to see. I guarantee you, because we're sitting there talking. Like I said, I was in some of the best shape of my life.
Right.
Some of those offensive linemen, yeah, they weren't in the best shape. I'm pretty sure there was some.
Oh my God!
I'm
I can
sure,
only imagine.
Oh, I'm pretty sure there were some women who actually wanted to go over and ask them, "Hey, could you put this towel on?" Yeah, yeah. But that, yeah, I was looking forward to answering that question. I'm gonna take a. I want to do something real quick.
Okay.
The we like I said, we've had such a great time down here at the fair, and met some great people. Some of the great people are next door to us, the gelato spot right
oh,
here.
Oh, they are so good.
Yeah, and I did it last week, and I also wanted to do it this week because Pam, who we've kind of, she's been taking such good care of us down here. I tried the strawberry yesterday. I had the chocolate after I did Dave's
Ooh,
show.
I'm so jealous.
I think Makia and I, we did the almond snicker.
That was good.
Yeah, so I've been sampling a little bit, and they just have been so hospitable to us, and I wanted to make sure. Now, they've got four locations across the valley here. They've got, and it's called the Gelato Spot. I'm not sure what the nutritional content is in comparison to ice cream.
They said that it's half the fat of ice cream, and I hope that's correct, because if it is, I'm going to be addicted.
Yeah, I'm definitely, they've got a fan in me now, and I want to give everybody the four locations that they're in. They've got a spot on Scottsdale Road and Shea. There's another one on 40th Street and Greenway. They've got one on 3rd Avenue, Old Town Scottsdale, and that's where Pam works. So if you ever go into the one on 3rd Avenue, go in and say hi to Pam. They also have another one on 32nd and Camelback. And I actually had Pam write down some of the favorite flavors. I've already given one or two of them away. The almond Snickers, you got to go in and try that one. There's cookies and cream, mango and pineapple. So I think I'm going to be a little adventurous tonight. I think I'm actually going to do a little mix of a couple of things. That's how I do it. That's
nice.
How I roll. And I know you're probably both thinking I'm crazy, the two of you sitting next to me, because it's so cold and who's going to eat something?
It is cold.
Yeah, this is – I'm like a big polar bear. I love this weather. I just I think about everybody back east right now. They would die for 60 degrees. And it's probably about 50, 55, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But they would still kill for 55-degree weather. And we got everybody out here. I'm looking around out here. Everybody's in – you know, long sleeve coats and stuff like that. It's really not that cold. So I know Makia is sitting next to me right now. She's thinking, Lord, just get me to 7 o'clock so I can get out of here. She's shaking her head right now too. And don't forget, Zarai Speaks
Wednesday.
Starting Wednesday, November 9th at 4 o'clock. And I'm going to be on the show with her. She wanted me there for a little comfort level. So I'm going to be there for her, but everybody, I hope you tune in because she's got a great format that she's got put together, and she's really going to talk a lot of knowledge. So I hope everybody will tune in and support her like you've supported me. So now that that's all out of the way.
Okay, now this is a female question,
okay?
Because I know no man is going to be thinking about this question. My question is, how do these professional athletes find wives? Are they already dating the girlfriends before they make it to the NFL or the NBA or the MLB? Or are they girls that they find in the clubs, end up dating, and getting married? Because, man, to me, because I've been around professional athletes in college. I had a friend who was dating one, and she brought me along to parties. It was great. It was fun. You know, they're real nice. They're real cool. But I also saw the girls, especially spring training out here, you know.
You mean the stampede?
Oh, yeah.
When spring training gets here?
Oh, yeah. All the girls suddenly come out to anywhere they think the players are going to be because they're hoping to be the next wife. So I know that professional athletes must have on some part of their brain, they know that girls are after them from who they are. Maybe not who they are on the inside, but what they're doing. So how does that work? How do professional athletes get wives and all that stuff?
The question is all of the above. And I always tell people this. When you're an athlete, you're still part of the national society.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is athletes, the high profile is what you get a lot of these issues kind of are out there. The average athlete, if he's lucky, you know, he's probably, just like anybody else, he's found a high school sweetheart, and they've dated, and they eventually get married, hopefully. You know, that's like the fairy tale part of it, but I think why a lot of athletes get in trouble is because they get to a certain point in their career, and all of a sudden they find themselves probably looking in all the wrong places for a significant other, and we're going to talk about some of those seedy spots that they're in, you know, I wouldn't say clubs, but the strip clubs and stuff like that. Athletes meet women in any way you could imagine, whether it be, like you just mentioned, the stampede, as I call it, when spring training comes back out here.
Oh, holy cow.
There, you could tell, when without even know what time of the year, when it was time for baseball to restart, to start back up, because every woman all of a sudden now is in all her best attire.
Oh, yeah.
She's got all the heels that she didn't wear during the winter and all that kind of stuff. That all comes out of the closet. She goes nowhere without makeup.
That's right.
And every opportunity when they find out where the gathering is, and there used to, you know, some notable spots that everybody knew once everybody got back in town. One of them was Barcelona, and that closed years ago. That was when the closer it got to spring training, it was almost like you could see it happening.
Yep.
It was like the leaves change in the fall. In the summer, it was the grass is going to start growing and get greener. The girls are going to be coming out in search of their next whatever. And, you know, as an athlete, you have to kind of be guarded about that. And I think a lot of guys are. They're cynical in a way because they know the situation and circumstances. In a lot of instances, though, they like to use that to their advantage, too, though.
Right.
You know, they know people are looking for them, you know, looking after them, trying to get at them, basically. And like I said, it's just a big old free-for-all.
When I was out and about with my girlfriends, because, again, I was dating, I had a friend dating an athlete, a baseball player. So I was in that circle for a while, but I wasn't, it was kind of cool to be like, oh, yeah, I saw Sammy Sosa, or I was here, and I was there, and I know this guy. To me personally, I wasn't all about trying to get married to one of them. I was just cool that I could just hang out with them as normal people, but at the same time, I would always hear a different, when I wasn't hanging around with them, and I was at different locations. You said Barcelona, McDuffie's was a big one, because right across the street is Peoria Sports Complex.
Yep.
So I would hear the girls saying, hey, did you see the baseball players? Are they here yet? I would hear them say that. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh, duh, spring training. So they were on the prowl get their players so they could get into the
Just trying to get their hooks. Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, it's a shame because it shouldn't be like that. But
no, it shouldn't.
It is just, like I said, it is part of the game and the lifestyle.
Does it make it hard? Does it make them guarded? Does it make them not want to go out and, I mean,
here, it all depends on what stage they are in their life.
Okay.
If they are ready for a relationship or really looking for a good quality woman, and here's the thing, it's not against the rules to meet somebody anywhere, meaning there are a lot of very good women out at nightclubs with friends like you were and doing it. It's not all scandalous out
there.
No,
it's not.
It really isn't. So we can't paint the picture like just because they meet somewhere. I know a lot of guys who've met women at some of the craziest places and clubs and things like that, and they're still happily married years and years and years later. The problem is when it comes down to, you know, it's almost like a game. You'll see women that are just out there just throwing it at everybody, you know, just because of who they are. And what happens is, yeah, a lot of guys do get, you know, like I said, I was getting back to the point of where they are in their life. If they're just out there to have fun and run and gun and all that kind of stuff, then that's what they're looking for. That's what they're going to find. If they're looking for a quality woman, then, you know, maybe they're not out at the clubs, or maybe they're looking for more than just, you know, the fly-by-night situation. So, yeah, it's a tricky lifestyle. It really is tough because, you know, you try to stay away from too much bad stuff out there. Sometimes it's almost like you need a shower even just after being out amongst mm-hmm. it. But yeah, I always found that comical when spring training. Like, you know, happened. It's a ritual every year.
Oh yeah.
Just because Barcelona closed down does not mean they're all not congregating
That's
somewhere
right.
else. As soon as
and
we
these
get
these girls, I can tell you, they will know where those places are, and they will.
Oh
go
yeah,
there.
Yeah. And you know, it's from the other side, the guys are not very shy about letting everybody know where they're going to be either, because they know what comes with it.
I guess in a way, on the guy side, why wouldn't they want some pretty girls hanging out with them, right? They just got done having fun, playing their game. I mean, females just bring beauty to a man's life, right?
Yeah, as long as it's used in the proper way.
That's right.
But yeah, you're right.
So in a way, I guess I can't blame an athlete for wanting that around. But at the same time, I always wondered, I mean, gosh, every one of them knows, they have to know that females are scandalous, and some just want you for the money and who you are, the stature of who mm-hmm. you are, which is pretty sad because they have hearts too, and it's not cool to mess with a man's heart, just like it's not cool to mess with a girl's heart. So see, that was my female question.
That was your female question.
Had to bring the love in.
I like that though. But yeah, it's a good question, because it is, you know, I always fall back on, because athletes are, you know, more in the limelight and everything, but we still do lead normal lives though. You have to, at least people with common sense, athletes with common sense, know that for me, I always knew what I did was a privilege, but it wasn't who I was. It was what I did. So I tried to always make sure I separated one from the other.
But that's hard, even for us regular people, for lack of a better word. Sometimes even regular men who do regular jobs, they put their whole identity into that job.
Yeah.
And it's not what they do, but they identify that that's who I am.
Yeah.
And when you take that away, that's tough.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the biggest part is the money issue. Mm-hmm. You know, that when you're making that kind of money, you really do feel invincible. And all of a sudden, you know, you're not making that. I mean, you might have a little change still put away, but when you're not getting those regular checks. And,
yeah.
And the other thing, when you're
I think it would be so cool one day to see $1 million paycheck. I'm waiting for that
I would
to
like
happen.
To see one of those, too. I never saw one of those.
$1 million.
But, yeah, I would like to see one of those, too, like a big, big vault
yes,
check like that.
I want a banker to cash that $1 million check, and I want to just swim around in it for a minute, and then I'll put it in the bank.
Well, somebody just won the lottery with the Powerball. Somebody hit for
$243
million.
I can't believe it.
I didn't even see who won it.
East Coast.
East Coast?
Yeah.
Wow, could you imagine?
I wanted to play. I forgot to buy a ticket, and thank God, because I would have lost my dollar.
Was that also
just a chance to swim in $1 million would have been fun.
What was that? There was a great scene from one of those movies. Oh my goodness, I'm trying to think of this one, with Woody Harrelson and Demi Moore and Redford and Indecent Proposal.
Oh, yeah.
When they went down and won all the money at the casino. And then came back and they laid in the bed and basically.
That's what I would do. Then I'd put it away.
Then you put it away. Okay. I'm sure, you know, it's funny because when the lottery gets that big, everybody starts, you know, playing it and dreaming it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, even, you know, I had a bunch of people in my office, they all do the pool. And, you know, the conversation as the drawing gets closer, everybody's talking about what they would do if they won it, you know. And some of the stories, you know, yours is now put into the vault, too, because some of the stories are really kind of interesting.
Yeah. because I've never seen that much money in my life. Just to see it, that would just be so cool. I don't know.
Well, you could almost practice and you could go get some Monopoly money.
Fake money.
Get some Monopoly money. You know, you can get tons of that.
I know, right? So, okay. We talked about your football. We did mention your baseball. How did you make that transition from baseball to football?
That was quite the journey. And you know what? While I'm sitting here, Makia always gets on me about not plugging anything enough. But my book, Easy Does It, The Journey of a Lifetime, that actually chronicles the whole journey from my growing up to, you know, signing my baseball contract to making the transition to football and beyond. Anybody who's interested in purchasing that, you can visit our website, www.ezsportstalk.com.
That's E-Z, not E-A-S-Y.
Yeah, the E and a Z, sportstalk.com. And you can visit us on there. You can purchase the book, and I'll even autograph them, you know, when I get the request.
Nice.
So. But to get back to the question, I was in the in my ninth year as a minor league baseball player, and I had made stops at every level. I was a highly drafted out of high school in 87, third baseman with the White Sox. Played with the White Sox for four plus years, was eventually traded to the Brewers. I'd reached every level. Like I said, I started in rookie ball, went up to A ball, was in double A, eventually in triple A with the Indians in 95. And in 94, that was the strike year when the Major League Baseball cut the season short, didn't have a World Series that year. But the following year, we all came back, and I actually had I had signed an agreement with the Cleveland Indians. I was going to play, signed a AAA contract. And that's what my intentions were to do, and what I did. But the Indians had different plans. They were looking for guys that were going to cross the line and play the replacement player deal. And at the time,
replacement player?
Yeah, that's what they wanted.
As in, if the first string got injured, then one of you guys?
No, they were looking for guys that would come and actually, they were trying to force the hand of the big league ball players who were being locked out.
Oh.
They were going to have players come in and have their, you know, basically replace the big league ball players. And I refused to do that. I actually didn't. I told the Indians, Mike Hargrove was the manager at the time, and he was coming over to our spring training because the minor league camp, we opened up the following year in 95. We weren't affected by the strike. We were business as usual. And I refused to do across the line. And every day he would come over from the big league camp, and, you know, he had all the guys over there, and he would come up and he'd call me off the field, and he'd say, "Hey, Smitty, you know, what are you doing over here? I need you over there in big league camp with me because, you know, I really I like what you do, and I think you could be an asset, and, you know, you'll be getting a great look over." And I said, "Well, you know, I appreciate that, Mike, but I signed a AAA contract. I'm going to honor that. And if I'm doing as well as you think I am, you know, what I'm doing over here, you'll eventually get back to you over there as well." So, you know, he honored that. But what happened was when the strike ended, all the big league ball players came back and the 40-man roster guys, and I was up in AAA at the time. Our season had already started. We were a month or so into it. And I was leading the league in home runs, second in the league in RBIs at the time, and I could play four different positions or DH as well. I was a third baseman, first baseman, right fielder,
wow,
left fielder. And I could also DH. But what happened was,
what's
when
DH?
Designated hitter.
Oh, duh.
So,
hello.
One of those moments, huh?
Yeah.
But what happened is, to make the long story short, the Indians started messing around with me a little bit, sat me down, didn't play me. I sat for 2 weeks on a bench, didn't have an opportunity to play. And like I said, I could play four different positions. And after it was all said and done, they ended up giving me one game and then sent me back. They called me into the office and let me know that they wanted me to play every day, so they were sending me back to Double A. And I thought, I'm in my ninth year.
Now, is that a demotion then?
Demotion.
Okay.
Demotion.
That's,
like I said, I was leading the league in home runs and RBIs and everything, so they decided we're going to send you back to Double A. Now, mind you, I went from the American Association when I was in Triple A, all of a sudden, we were flying. I was in Buffalo, and we played in cities like New Orleans and Omaha and, all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, they were sending me back to a league where I was going to be back on buses in the Eastern League in Canton, Ohio. And we had a 14-hour bus ride to places like Portland, Maine, and stuff like that.
Oh, that must have been smelly.
Oh,
I know how guys are.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo! Little chew, I smell it overnight in here.
Think about it. 14-hour bus ride, all these guys. So basically what happened is I knew that I was done with my baseball career at that point in time. I was just so disheartened by fighting all those years to do what I'd done, and here I am a step from the big leagues, and this happens. I decided it was time for me to move on from baseball, and what happened was I actually went, got in touch with my brother first. He was already down in New Orleans playing with the Saints, and because of time constraints, I'll cut this down a little bit, but he talked to me, and I basically told him what my plan was, maybe get in shape and then try to get into the NFL. I hadn't played football in over 10 years, and he told me, yeah, if anybody can do it, you can do it. So the following year, I got in shape, after the season, because I finished that season in Canton, Akron, got in shape, went back to, actually came out here, and trained at ASU with Coach Pat Murphy, who was the baseball coach at the time, and they got me in great shape, looking for an opportunity in the NFL. Nothing happened. At the last minute, I got an opportunity to go over in the World League in Frankfurt, Germany. Went over there in the spring, had four great games, caught some touchdown passes, but had a knee injury right in the fourth game.
Oh,
I thought it was
going
to be derailed. I actually ruptured my MCL. They flew me back across to the States for 4 weeks. I rehabbed, was back on the field in 5 weeks, finished the last couple games of the season over there, played in the World Bowl. And by the time I got back here in June, my agent's phone was ringing, and I got my first opportunity in the NFL with the Rams in training camp. They actually released me the last cut. It was the last cut that year. They released me, but they wanted me to come back and be on their practice squad. But lo and behold, I'd done enough where other teams were looking at me, and the Redskins wanted me as well.
Yay!
Signed up going and played. Yeah, so that was the
Oh, what a cool story.
It's a condensed version. And I
I'm
tell
so
anybody,
glad your brother played in the NFL.
Yeah.
Was that a big help to you?
Oh,
immensely. Sounds like a
immensely.
Big help.
I would not have gone and done what I did
Irv,
without his.
Irv, you're the man.
Irv was, like I said, he was my bridge, and like I said, he would, you know, he. It was one of the greatest experiences of my first active game in the NFL was against him. His Saints.
Gosh.
So my mom and dad flew down to Atlanta, and it was a great experience.
That had to be the best. Either way, your parents won.
Yeah. I can talk about that for a long time, but we're getting close to the end of the show, and I'm telling you, we are, and I told you earlier, we're going to have to do this again because, first off...
I have more questions.
First off, you have tons of questions. And I love the fact, and maybe tell us quickly why you are so passionate about sports. What is it about sports that makes you so passionate?
Specifically, it's football because it's something me and my husband can have together.
Okay.
He loves football. I love football. I've loved football since high school, and I got involved in seeing what that was all about.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got season tickets to ASU. Go Sun Devils! I love the Sun Devils! and that's just something that we just had in common.
Okay.
And so I just really clung on to that because it's good if you have a something that your husband's really interested in and you can participate in that. Because more females think that the men should just do what they're interested in and forget about the interest the men are interested in. So I would encourage wives to try and find things that your husband likes and do your very best to be a part of them.
That is a great sentiment, too. And it's a great way for us to be coming to the end of the show because I think it's very important, like you said, for couples to have a common interest. And what better way, what is better than sports? And, a lot of times you hear the stories about once Sunday comes, the husband goes and he sits in his cave, and then the wife or his significant other, she goes and she does her thing. That is such quality time that they could be spending together.
I love it.
Here's the thing, though.
Good game in him all day long.
Here's
love
the
it.
Thing. On the flip side, hubby or significant other has to participate in some of the things that make you happy, too.
That's right.
If mama ain't happy, nobody's happy.
That's
so,
right.
So give me a quick...
My husband will go to girl movies with me.
Ah, okay.
He hates them. But he'll go for me.
He'll go for you. That's a beautiful thing, though.
Yes.
And like I said, you have to have that. It's a balance. So, and the other thing is, everybody out there, if you're, I don't know if you're male, come listen to the Easy Sports Talk Radio show, too. This is great. These are the type of shows that I love to do because they're what I call informative.
Mm-hmm.
You're not tuning in to hear scores and highlights and things like that. I like to try to bring a little more of a everyday feel, every man feel to it, because think of the questions you have. I'm sure there are other people that are out there if some of our listeners were thinking, wow, I always wondered that myself. So that's why we're definitely going to have to do this again.
Yeah, we have to because I'm not even done.
You didn't get half the list. So now we got another show. And here's the thing. When we do it, we're going to be in our nice, comfy studio.
That's right.
We're going to be in our nice, comfy studio. Although this has been a lot of fun. So we're going to wrap things up.
Stay tuned. The Steve Sanchez show is on its way.
Okay, Steve Sanchez is on next. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is the Easy Sports Talk Show. I want to thank Amber for joining me as well as my producer, McKeon. Everybody, have a great finish to your weekend. Bye-bye.